Hello, my lovelies. It's Lady Curious, back with another true crime. Today, it will be about three horrible tragedies on the Appalachian Trail. Now, I say Appalachian, but I know some other people call it something else, so I'm very sorry if I offend anyone that does live on the Appalachian Trail / mountain area. But that's just how I've grown up saying it. And I still struggle to even say the word normally. So I would love to have your feedback. If y'all like these kind of missing 411 cases, I can't really call them that because Mr. Ballin used to do them, and the detective that wrote the missing 411 books about mysterious things happening to people in national forest and areas, I guess laid claim that he could not read his stories anymore on his channel. So I don't want to get in trouble for that going forward. So I will be calling these just missing people in national forest, or I will call them tragedies that happened on Blank Mountain or Blank Trail. But I did not get these from his book. I just Googled missing people on the Appalachian Trail, and it pops up everyone that unfortunately has came to their end or is still missing till this day. I know that through my life, I've always heard about people going missing on the Appalachian Trail. My husband wants to go hike some of it and makes me kind of nervous. He's a very good outdoorsman, but even the best stuff can happen. The first person that I will be talking about today is someone that I actually heard about before I read her full story. And it really saddened me that this happened to her. Her name is Geraldine Largue, but I will call her Jerry because that was her nickname that everyone called her. When you are an avid hiker or a person that does trails, you earn like a nickname by other hikers. And on these long trails, they have like checkpoints, I guess that's what you would call it, where they have these books and you can like write stuff to other hikers or say hello or I was here. And they called Jerry Inchworm. That's her hiker name. She was 66 years old when she went missing. She went missing on July 22nd of 2013. She walked from Harper's Ferry in West Virginia and was planning on hiking to Catawdon before she vanished from the trail just north of Rangeley, Maine. She was supposed to be meeting her husband at a road crossing on Tuesday the 23rd, but she didn't show up. You know, she did this hike by herself, and because of her age, her husband had been kind of like traveling by car along the trail. And he would meet his wife every 2 days to check up on her. But they were supposed to be meeting on Tuesday. It was like her check-in date. I guess he gave her things if she needed food or water. It was pouring down rain that day. And her husband just assumed that since it was pouring down, she could not meet him, and decided to just go ahead and just chose a camp, or, you know, to camp outside instead of hiking the 13 miles to meet him. Jerry was last seen on Monday, July 22nd, by the three young southbound men on Lone Mountain, about 3 miles south of Spalding Mountain Lean-To. They said that she appeared to be fine. She even texted her husband that day and then continued toward Spalding Mountain Lean-To. But after that, she wasn't seen by any more hikers. And the hikers that stayed at the Spalding Lean-To on Monday and Tuesday night said that she was never even there. She never made it. But contradictory to the statements given by multiple hikers that Jerry didn't stay at Spalding Lean-To, a weird unknown caller had information otherwise. On the evening of Wednesday the 24th, the owner of a Stratton Motel and Hostel, a popular spot for, you know, hikers passing through, received a phone call from a woman who wanted to get word to Jerry's husband that she would be late in meeting him. The woman said that she had spent the night of Tuesday, the 23rd, at Spotting Lean-To with Jerry. Police have tried to locate this caller, but she hasn't came forward. To me, that's pretty fishy. Hundreds of people have contributed to the search for Jerry on foot, ATV, horseback, and airplane. Over 100 search and rescue personnel and multiple search dogs did a fine-tooth comb grid search of the Long Mountain around area on August 4th, 13 days after she went missing. One theory is that Jerry, who was previously healthy, had a stroke, became disoriented, and wandered off the trail. If this were the case, wouldn't she have lost her gear? Could she really have wandered so far while having a stroke that rescuers couldn't find her or her pack? I don't know. They thought it was weird. The search continues for Jerry. We can only hope that she is found alive. Even though Jerry was a experienced hiker, who knew what she was doing? I'm not entirely convinced that Jerry's disappearance was preventable. Jerry was said to be afraid of being alone and prone to anxiety. A diminutive 66-year-old woman with a poor sense of direction, hiking the Appalachian Trail by herself, who wandered in terrain so wild it is used for military training. She waited nearly a month in the Maine woods for help that never came. Jerry actually chronicled her journey in a black covered notebook that summer of 2013, and she kept writing after she lost her way, even as her food supply dwindled, along with her hopes of being found. Her last entry reflected a graceful experience, acceptance of what was coming. She wrote this, "When you find my body, please call my husband George and my daughter Carrie. It will be the greatest kindness for them to know that I am dead and where you found me, no matter how many years from now." And she was right, it would be 2 years before a logging company survey stumbled upon her campsite and remains, solving a mystery that had tormented her family and defied teams of experienced searches. Jerry, a retired nurse from Tennessee, had survived nearly a month on her own, longer than many old backwood hands thought possible, before dying of exposure and starvation. On Thursday, the Maine Warden Service released more than 1,500 pages of its files on her disappearance, shedding light on the fears of her family and friends, and the search that pursued countless false leads. The documents include brief excerpts from her journal and the plaintive text messages she tried in vain to send to her husband from a place beyond the reach of cell towers. Some of her texts said this, "Lost since yesterday, off trail 3 to 4 miles, call police for what to do, please. Call police for what to do, please." In fact, she had set up camp less than 2 miles off the trail. There with her black tent and her possessions neatly sorted into Ziploc bags, she wrote a note to her husband on the cover of the journal. It said, "George, please read, XOXO. Jerry had adopted the trail name Inchworm, making light of her pace, but that pace had taken her nearly 1,000 miles from Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, where she had a friend, Jane Lee, had set off on April 23, 2013. Her husband of 42 years, George, drove ahead and met them in prearranged spots with supplies and sometimes took them to motels for showers and a night indoors. On June 30th in New Hampshire, Miss Lee cut short her hike to tend to a family emergency, but Jerry insisted on continuing by herself. Later, Miss Lee would tell an investigator that Jerry had a poor sense of direction. Miss Lee said that Jerry had taken a wrong turn on the trail more than once. Jerry became flustered and combative when she made these kinds of mistakes. Jerry was a meticulous planner, made friends easily on the trail, but she feared the dark and being alone, said Miss Lee, who told park wardens that George did not know the extent of Jerry's inability to deal with the rigors and challenges of the trail. But after he reported his wife missing, George told an investigator that Jerry was probably over her head. Her doctor would tell investigators that once she ran out of the medication she took for anxiety, she could suffer panic attacks. Her smile was so infectious that before she set off the next morning, a fellow hiker named Dottie Rust asked to take her picture. In the picture, she is beaming and wearing her backpack, her socks pulled high, as hikers do to ward off scrapes and blisters. It was about 6:30 a.m. the last time anyone who known to see her alive. By 11 a.m., she was lost, in trouble. Jerry wrote in a text message to her husband, "Got off trail to go to bathroom. Now lost." She asked him to call the Appalachian Mountain Club to see if a trail maintenance can help me. Somewhere north of Woods Road, XOXO. The message was never received. Jerry had left the trail in one of its most rugged sections, with thick underbrush and trees packed so tightly they almost seemed to merge. You step off the trail 20 or 50 feet and turn around, it's very different to see where the trail was. If you didn't know which way the trail was, you could easily walk into circles for hours. Jerry saw high ground, possibly hoping for a cell signal. She tried over and over again to send the messages. On July 23rd, she set up camp, laying her tent atop sticks and pine needles under a canopy of hemlocks that probably obscured her from airborne rescuers. She tied a shiny silver blanket between two trees, possibly to attract attention, and nearby trees had burn marks. It looks like some sort of fire was attempted on those trees by Jerry, Lieutenant Kevin Adam of the Warden Services, in a report. People suggested that she had been murdered, that she might be lodged in treetops, that she had fallen in the river, and that she had been spotted at a woman's shelter in Tennessee. These are the false tips. Some hikers thought they might have seen her on a trail, but weren't sure. Others had seen sketchy men who they thought might have done harm to her. Psychics called to report visions of her, including one who insisted incorrectly that she had broken her ankle. Search efforts were scaled back on August 4th. Jerry kept writing daily observations and letters to her family in her journal until August 10th. Even drawing out a calendar to keep track of the days, she wrote a final entry that she dated August 18th. Though investigators are not sure the date is accurate, her remains were found on October 14th, 2015, 2 years later, inside her sleeping bag, in a campsite she had kept neat until the very end. Around her was the ample gear she had hauled, items like a blue and white bandana still containing water. When Jerry's family visited the patch of wilderness 2 weeks later, they left a white wooden cross decorated with messages etched in black marker. One written in a child's hand saying, "I wish you were here." Now, these are my opinions and my thoughts about Jerry passing away. This is very sad. How turned around you can get in the forest. You really have to be careful. Rest in peace, Jerry. The second hiker we'll be talking about today is Derek Luking. "Don't try to follow me." A note on an abandoned car read. Searchers with the National Park Service located this note on the car of Derek Luking, 24, of Louisville, Tennessee, who had vanished in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park on Saturday, March 17th, 2012, in the area of Maryville, Tennessee. With the search underway in the Great Smoky Mountains, it was clear finding Derek would not be easy. His family had already been engaged in an exhausting search, and it has been several days since anyone had heard from him. Derek worked as an orderly at Peninsula Behavioral Health Center in Tennessee. His family became concerned When they found out he had stopped reporting to work and would not return their phone calls, compounding their concerns, they were concerned with the fact that his disappearance coincided with the first anniversary of his grandfather's death. He was very close to him. Derek did not show up for work, and calls to his cell phone went unanswered, with a mutual friend alerting roommate Ryan Molden that Derek had not arrived at work that morning. So Ryan called Derek's family. Derek traveled from their home in Virginia through the night to Tennessee. Ryan and family members checked Derek's computer and found a search for the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and a reservation for a hotel. A March 17th surveillance video showed Derek leaving the Micro Inn and Suites in Cherokee, North Carolina, near the national park. On the bed of the hotel room, his family found a Bible, and on the floor was a liquor bottle. Derek was wearing just a day backpack, and this video footage would be the last sighting of Derek before his strange disappearance from the Great Smoky Mountains area. Derek was born in North Virginia, was a graduate of Johnson University, formerly known as Johnson Bible College in Knoxville, Tennessee. The last thing he was seen in was a dark-colored track pants with white stripes down each leg, dark athletic sneakers, a dark blue or black book bag, and possibly a waterproof watch. The family went out looking for him that same day, and by luck managed to find Derek's car, a white Ford Escape, in the parking lot of an area called Newfound Gap on the Tennessee-North Carolina line. In the abandoned Ford, there was a lot of newly purchased survival gear, including a pack axe, compass, lamp, pocket knife, knife sharpener, tent, and a sleeping bag, 100 of black parachute cord, granola bars, and a survival belt containing a multi-tool, flashlight, and a fire starter rod. This kit was worth around like $1,000. They even found pages from a military survival manual, Derek's wallet, and cash were also found in the vehicle. Derek had obviously been preparing a trip into the wilderness, but strangely he had not taken any of his newly purchased outdoor gear with him. I don't know, maybe he wanted to live in the woods. Maybe he went to scope it out and something happened. I don't think he hurt himself. They said that the note they found that said, "Don't follow me," was very disturbing. Suggested he wanted to disappear, perhaps with suicidal thoughts. Earlier that year, Tim Derek, Derek's father, had noticed a change in his son. He started drinking a little bit and smoking cigarettes, which was highly unusual for him. He wasn't happy with his job, where his life was going. He just assumed Derek was dealing with the post-graduation stress and transition to adulthood. But his family and friends dispute that he had any serious depression or suicidal tendencies, which would have caused him to kill himself in the national park. Perhaps the "don't try to follow me" message was left by someone wishing to throw the authorities off scent. Despite the note, search and rescue workers preserved and did try to follow him. An intensive search was launched of the area where his car was found, and rangers interviewed campers and hikers in the vicinity, asking whether they had seen Derek, but strangely no one could remember seeing him. Despite it being a sunny day, and the area was full of people picnicking, hiking, and so on, as a result, authorities believed that he might have gone off trail immediately after leaving his car and quickly got lost or intentionally avoided people in the area to avoid detection. There are reports of a possible sighting report along Newfound Gap Road where Derek may have entered the woods, but this came to nothing. It didn't help. The searchers had been organized into 14 search teams that have walked more than 70 miles of trails surrounding the Newfound Gap parking area. Trail search teams explored any area along the trail where it would appear relatively easy to get off the trail into the woods. And once off trail, the teams would look for tracks or clues of anyone that passed by. The teams continued into the woods until They reach a point where it is either unsafe to continue until they reached a barrier, such as a bushes they could not pass, where Derek could have not gone without leaving evidence of his passage. Although the trail was popular and well-used, walking off it led quickly into dangerous wilderness. One ranger said at the time, "We would have felt better if he had bought all this gear and brought it with him." In this case, he made preparations, but he didn't follow through. Did he change his mind on the equipment, or did he bump into someone that forced him off trail and told him to write the note, "Don't follow me"? It's all really strange. Very strange. There are some theories behind Derek's disappearance. Here are some of them that are on the internet. Accidental death. Derek's family stated that Derek had been a big fan of the TV show Man vs. Wild, in which host Bear Grylls gets left out in the wilderness by himself with little to no gear to find his way back to civilization whilst living off the land. This led authorities to speculate that he may have been trying to do that show. And that's what I just said not long ago. Could Derek have suddenly decided to leave his own equipment behind to make things more challenging, like in the TV show? Unfortunately, according to his family, Derek was not particularly experienced with outdoors. So if this was his decision, this was very foolish of him. Even experienced outdoors people can struggle in the Smoky Mountains National Park. Maybe he went out to check out the trail, planning to come back for his outdoor kit and somehow getting lost on the way. Bingo. I believe this is probably what happened. Or that he was attacked by a wild animal or kidnapped. Nah. If he was attacked by a bear or cat, there would have been a trace. You know, like blood or torn clothing or drag marks or something. Another theory is that, you know, Derek went off to commit suicide. The family has stated that the day he disappeared was the 1-year anniversary of the death of his grandfather, which he was really close to. But if he was planning to kill himself, why buy all the expensive new survival gear? Two men of a similar age gone missing in the same area at the same time? Coincidence or something more sinister? Ooh, that's creepy. Derek has never been found and he is still listed as missing. His father posted a letter regarding his son's disappearance to help find Derek. This is the words of his father. "I know many of you have questions concerning Derek's disappearance and have seen conflicting information in the news reports. I have put together the following information in the hopes to clarify questions you may have." Derek went Wednesday, March 14th from his home. He stayed at Motel 6 on the 14th. And then he went to the park on the 15th and then was seen at the Micro Hotel in Cherokee on the 16th. His car was found on March 17th at 8:30 a.m. The note was not addressed to anyone, so it could have been for us or the rangers. The park rangers have never quit searching for him. As they rappelled down some high cliffs March 29th and did not find anything. The rangers, park employees, volunteers, and trail runner continue to look for him till this day. Rangers are also still looking into the investigation aspect of the case, following up purchases he made and trying to find out if there are any other significant clues in the recent past. He also had a headlamp, a pocket knife, iPod Touch, and some granola bars. He also purchased additional supplies from Walmart for cash. 5 empty bags were found in the car with opened packaging listing Walmart, but we have not been able to confirm what he purchased. Appalachian Trail hikers who have talked to family have said that Derek could survive for a long time with the supplies he had. The Park Service initially asked our family not to search directly for Derek to avoid contaminating clues and wanted trained Park Service searcher on the trails, so we handed out a flyer with Derek's picture to everyone who hit the trails. As the Park Service's direct search wound down, we started. Our family and friends, along with the others concerned people, gathered on the 24th and 25th of March to search for Derek. A total of 60 people showed up to hike and hand out flyers. Hikers that showed up hiked a total of about 175 miles of trail and people handed out 3,000 flyers to people in the park and the surrounding areas. There is still possibly that Derek is not in the Great Smoky National Park, so we would like to make sure the information about him is available to the public. The family has not given up hope on finding Derek and doing anything in their power to work with and help the rangers who are investigating, as well as trying to make sure the information is out to the world as well. There is a Facebook page, Find Derek, that the family is keeping up to inform anyone interested about this case. Please help spread the word to anyone hiking in the Smoky Mountain area and on the Appalachian Trail to keep an eye out for Derek. These are my thoughts. I really do believe that he probably went out to just get away from everything, to be able to think, to just leave everything behind, not to hurt himself. I don't believe that. I believe that he wanted to go live out in the woods, maybe. And he went to go find camp, and maybe it was too far. He was tired, and he set up camp, and then something happened to him. Between that day that he went and found camp, or where he wanted to stay, and he probably did go off trail because he wanted to find somewhere where no one was. Especially if he was going to want to, like, try to live out there. Because you can get in trouble, supposedly, by living out in the woods. He wasn't doing good. He was drinking a little. Something was on his mind. Just something was bothering him. And he might have been going through a little bit about his grandfather passing away and missing him. And maybe he just wanted to go out there and have a change of scenery. And then something happened to him. An accident. But that is my opinion. I would like for y'all to tell me what you think happened to these people. The next person we will be talking about is Paul Bernhardt. It had been a long push Friday on June 15, 2012, and Jake Melman and Paul Bernhardt needed to cool off. The two intrepid thru-hikers who had ventured from the deep south had pushed 20 miles, likely, from the west Carry Pond lean-to on the Appalachian Trail until arriving at Pierce Pond before dusk. So, the two decided to use the pond for a quick, much-deserved dip. This is a very sad story. I am going to let you know that there's not much and details of this story. I'm just going to tell you what I know, what a witness knows. They were hot, and they were hiking 20 miles, and they just wanted to take a little dip. But what was said was that when Bernhardt swam, he jumped in from a dock, and his friend Jake was, I think, on the dock watching him, and the further he swam from shore, he vanished beneath the pond surface and never rose. The game warden worked over the weekend to recover the body of Paul Anthony Bernhardt, 20, of Flushing, New York. Bernhardt had drowned in 15 feet of water, some 35 yards from the shore of Pierce Pond, with just a little more than 150 miles to go before Bernhardt would reach Culloden. Seems like a popular place. His journey was brought to a tragic end. He would have likely hit the northern terminus by the 4th of July, when Baxter State Park would be teeming with thru-hikers and weekend hikers and campers alike. But there was much more to Bernhardt's story than news reports told. Appalachian Trail's journals from the class of 2012 revealed that Bernhardt had a magnetic personality that made him instantly likable among his thru-hiker brothers and sisters. His hiker name was Parkside. I think that's cool. A man named Peter Wetzel decided at the age of 63 he would hike the Appalachian Trail. Early on down south, he met Bernhardt along North Carolina's section of the Appalachian Trail. According to a June entry in his trail journal, made just days after Bernhardt drowned, news of Bernhardt's death hit Wetzel hard. Bernhardt was the first hiker Wetzel met on the trail, so he became engrossed in following the progress of this super intelligent inquisitive kid. All along the way, he read Bernhardt's entries at the various registries along the trail and was struck by the humor and intelligence of the notes. One Appalachian Trail blogger, who had met and spent time on the trail with Melman, the last hiker to see Bernhardt alive, decided to post to the fallen hiker. According to the blogger, he had learned from Melman that this Appalachian Odyssey was a first for Bernhardt. Prior to the Appalachian Trail, he had little hiking experience and had never spent a night out in the woods. Yet he had put 2,029 miles under his boots by the time he reached Pierce Pond, an astounding feature that gives him the privilege of joining the ranks of hikers such as Emma Grandma Gatewood, who also had no prior hiking experience before journeying from Mount Oglethorpe to Katahdin in 1955. Even though Bernhardt never reached the trail's end, he did accomplish what many people never will: hike over 2,000 miles of the Appalachian Trail. Bernhardt was accepted into the Appalachian Trail Conservancy 2,000-miler list. Also on the list is a companion, Melman, with whom he would have finished his trek, and Peter J. Wetzel, who was much drawn to Bernhardt's amicable nature. Could there be more fitting tribute to a hiker of this caliber? I think not. Here's a little note someone wrote about him. We loved him because his positive energy, his sense of humor, his passion, and his deepness. He was wise enough to listen and to be worth being listened to. He was so likable and such a pleasant person to hang out with. He grew so much on the trail. Parkside definitely loved life, loved the Appalachian Trail, and was also excited to go back home after Katahdin. He told us how much he loved his family, his friends, his city, and how much he missed them. In honor of the great person you are and all the determination you put in your through hike, we are all going to go back to hike the 100 miles wilderness and climb Katahdin with you, so you'll be part of the Appalachian Trail spirit forever. We all love you. Thanks to have changed our lives. I know that after he passed away, a group of hikers that knew him and were close to him went ahead and started at the pond, and then they hiked all the way to Katahdin to finish his journey of remembrance. Well, the police are thinking that since it was a shock to his body because he just hiked 20 miles and he was overheated and his muscles were tense, that when he got into the cold water, he got cramps, muscle cramps, and they're thinking that's how he drowned. I'm sorry that this has taken me a little bit longer to get out. Remember to go check out Lady Curious. And also, please go check out my partner's channel, As the Raven Dreams. I think y'all would really love it. And if you haven't yet, please like and subscribe to our channels, especially this one. Rest in peace to these three souls. I want to give my condolences to the family. I'm very sorry that y'all lost your loved ones. Please, before you go out to the woods, make sure that you have some type of knowledge or you tell someone. I'll see y'all on my next one. Remember, stay safe.